Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich was back in the office yesterday working, his spokeswoman says, on the state's $2 billion budget shortfall. A $2 billion budget shortfall is pretty serious, but I think Blagojevich has bigger problems on his hands, namely the conspiracy and bribery charges against him for trying to sell a Senate seat. Today, former federal prosecutor and current criminal defense attorney Michael Kornacki gives us an update on the Blagojevich scandal. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jimmy, for having me.
We are also joined by Monica Davey with the New York Times. She is the Chicago bureau chief for the Times and has been covering this story since it broke Monday. Thank you for being with us.
Certainly.
So let's begin with you, Monica. Tell us precisely what the charges are.
Governor Blagojevich is charged with conspiracy to commit mail fraud and wire fraud, and he's also charged with soliciting a bribe.
And what kind of time are we talking about should he be convicted?
Well, you never know what it really comes out to be, but the maximum that those two counts give would be 30 years.
30 years. And there are many unnamed potential folks who may be swept up in all of this, and we'll ask you about that in just a moment, Monica. But let me turn to Michael Kornacki and ask you, as a matter of legal analysis, what does Fitzgerald have to prove to convict in this case?
Well, what he has to prove is that there was a conspiracy and agreement, and he has to prove at least one overt act, and people are get confused. You know, you can talk about committing a crime, and in most cases it's not a crime, but if you talk about it, then you commit an act in furtherance of the agreement, like having somebody talk to somebody else about it, then that's a conspiracy. So, you know, there's been a lot of talk about that the governor just was talking about things with his aide, but once they had the aide speak to somebody about it, then that became a crime. So it's not as difficult as people might think once they realize that an agreement with one act can make the conspiracy and even an attempt, because the federal statutes talk about an attempt and making the bribe offer or payment as in the same category.
Well, how strong, and it sounds, Michael, as though you think it is pretty strong, how strong do you think the government's case is against Blagojevich?
I think it's strong because, you know, the words that are heard are killers. I mean, you know, politicians have a tough road to hoe anyway, even the best and most honest, but in this case, you have the governor saying things that are mind-boggling, and like I said, it's a conspiracy count, which you can get as the same amount of time as a substantive count, and all they have to do is prove that somebody spoke to somebody in connection with those conversations he had. So it's really easy, and what's going on right now is that they're going to try to negotiate some kind of a standstill agreement, because they have to go to the grand jury within a period of time, 20 days to 30 days, depending on when he was arraigned. And right now, Fitzgerald either goes to the grand jury, he won't have a preliminary hearing, or they agree to a waiver of speedy indictment, they call it, to let things settle down and see what they can do. And also, the governor is holding a card. He's holding his office, and that's usually used in these cases as a chip in the plea negotiations.
Well, a couple of terrific issues you raised there. Let me turn back to Monica Davey with the New York Times and taking that last point first, he is still in office. Many people reacted with additional surprise. We were already stunned on Monday, but more surprise when he decided to go to work the next day after his arrest. There are calls from all sectors, including President-elect Barack Obama, that he resign. How likely is it that he will, Monica?
I think that's a really excellent question. I mean, so far he's shown no signs of being ready to step down. In fact, he has gone to work 2 days in a row, which some of his longtime aides say is somewhat unusual for the governor. He often stays home and works out of his house. So he's been turning up to the State of Illinois building and proceeding as if this were business as usual. And so I think that a lot of the lawmakers here in Springfield are getting ready to act, and presuming that he's not going to choose to step down.
I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. If you have a question about the Blagojevich story, you can give us a call, 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Michael Cornacchia, let me come back over to you and ask you to put on your criminal defense attorney hat. And Monica just mentioned that he's going about business as usual. Isn't that what you would advise him to do if you were representing him?
I guess, but what I would be advising is that he keep a low profile. And what I would be doing as his attorney, I would be trying to stop the march to the grand jury by executing a waiver of speedy trial time. And the way you try to defend this case, even with tapes, is to say, hey, it was just conversation, just politicians talking. Every politician, if you tape them at one point or another, would say the craziest things. And just defend it as politicians talking, politics, and then, you know, minimize the fact that, you know, the language itself, and say that nothing really happened. I mean, there's a way to defend against tapes, but in terms of him, he's got to remain the governor in terms of strategy for his own defense, because he can use it. He can use it as a negotiating tool. I mean, when Elliot Spitzer resigned, it was against apparently some people in his circles who said, don't resign because you can use it. But it helped him eventually, because a prosecutor, you know, looks at a sitting government official with great chagrin, and you want to use that, or you want to take away that motive for the prosecutor.
And Michael, you mentioned Governor Spitzer. We, of course, before that had Governor McGreevy in New Jersey. So by my count, that's at least three governors in 3 years caught up in a whole lot of scandal. How does this case differ from those, if it does?
Well, I mean, I think that it differs from them, because McGreevy and Spitzer were, and most people believe, were personal failings, albeit with McGreevy, he did have his aide on staff, so the taxpayers were paying for it. I think in this case, the governor's case in Illinois, this is exactly the kind of classic corruption case that people think goes on, maybe not. It's the pay-to-play, which we've seen remnants of that through all the corruption cases. But let's face it, you're a prosecutor, you want to do corruption work, there's three places in the country, New Orleans, New Jersey, and Chicago, and now Chicago's at the head of that list. I mean, think about it. I mean, it's really, to get deterrence in sentencing, apparently in Illinois, they're you know, drinking the Kool-Aid. I don't know.
And I want to invite our listeners to call in if they want to comment on that or have a question about the Blagojevich story. Again, the number is 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. I'm Jamie Floyd in for Brian Lehrer. My guests are Michael Cornacchia and Monica Davey. And Monica, let me come to you as the bureau chief and the person who's been covering with your colleagues this story since it broke. Michael has mentioned that there was no grand jury indictment before Blagojevich was arrested. Why did Fitzgerald, the prosecutor in this case, Patrick Fitzgerald, do this now? And how does he have to proceed from here?
Well, what the prosecutor said, Patrick Fitzgerald said on Tuesday, was that he went ahead and filed a complaint because he needed to. Essentially, there were crimes going on. They were underway. There was an executive at a children's hospital here who was potentially going to lose $8 million because he wasn't turning over a $50,000 donation to Mr. Blagojevich. There was clearly a Senate seat that was potentially going to be chosen when it looked like there was money being asked. So there were a number of issues that were crimes, I guess, underway, and so the prosecutor said that he had to move quickly. So it is unusual, I guess, to go with a complaint as opposed to an indictment, but he will now proceed to an indictment, and a grand jury is reportedly meeting now.
All right, and we do have a caller, Katie in Manhattan. You're on the air.
Hi, I wanted to just ask, why would doing the waiver of speedy trial be better than going before the grand jury? Isn't that going to take away his right to have the fast trial and make this go even quicker?
That's a terrific question, and I think that's one for you, Michael.
Well, what you want to do as a defense attorney, you want to stop the grand jury proceeding because you want to give yourself a chance to negotiate if you want to look for a plea, because once you're indicted in the criminal justice system, it's harder. You lose flexibility. Right now, it's a complaint. Right now, it's not an accusatory document. It's a holding document, so the indictment becomes a stronger accusatory instrument. So most defense attorneys will try to stop the process right in its tracks and try to see what's going on. Sometimes you can get a plea. Other times you can get resources. You can get together a defense team. But to go to a fast grand jury indictment can usually work to the disadvantage of someone that's accused of those crimes.
All right, a terrific question from Katie. My guests are Michael Kornacki, former federal prosecutor, current criminal defense attorney, and Monica Davey, who is the Chicago bureau chief for the New York Times. And we're talking about Illinois Governor Blagojevich and that scandal, as well as the impact it will have in the coming weeks and months as President-elect Obama is sworn into office. And I think I have another caller, Chris from Brooklyn. Are you there?
Hi. I heard on the tape that Blagojevich was turned down the offer of a job for his wife after 2 years, after Obama was in office for 2 years, a job on a major company board.
All right. Let me first ask Monica Davey if that's consistent with what is in the indictment, a job for the wife. I know that Mrs. Blagojevich is referenced throughout and, of course, on those recordings. Tell us what we know about her role, or I should say her alleged role in all of this.
That's right. According to the affidavit that was filed in connection to this, Mr. Blagojevich did speak repeatedly of one possible offering that he would accept in part of the Senate seat deal would be a position for his wife on a board or commission, and he seemed to be particularly concerned that it be very high-paying. He spoke a lot about his financial problems, how they really needed to make a lot of money, and he thought there might be a possibility that his wife could make, say, $250,000 on some board.
You know, I have to ask you about something that has really been talked about since the scandal broke, and I guess I'll ask both of you about this. It has less to do with the legal and more to do with social commentary about the salty language. Can I use my grandmother's old expression? The salty language that Blagojevich and his wife use on these tapes. Why so much focus on that, and is it at all relevant to the larger criminal charges against them? Monica?
Well, as somebody who's interviewed Governor Blagojevich many, many times, it is surprising to find out that somebody who you think speaks one way actually speaks another way when he's talking to other people. So I think that a lot of people are taken aback by that. I'm not sure it's that we're all so squeamish about the language that was used, but that's not how Governor Blagojevich sounds when he's speaking to the public or to reporters, and that's certainly not how Patty Blagojevich, his wife, sounds. And yet their language was pretty out there.
So the disconnect between the public image and the private lives as alleged and as apparently in these tapes. Michael, how about it? We in the world of criminal defense and criminal law, we certainly hear salty language, a lot of focus on that in this case.
Yeah, but in respect to the wife particularly, remember, she might have had a walk-on role, but that one excerpt where she says something about, I think it was Wrigley Field, the Tribune people, mm-hmm. or maybe somebody, that thing where she says, F them, you know, to hold back their funding or delay their, that gives her a role. She's a co-conspirator, and that's another thing about negotiating a plea here. The question is her liability such that it has to enter into the governor taking the fall and letting her get away? Because she's right in the mix. Usually, you know, I'm from an Italian family, and you know, you keep your family out. In this case, she's right in, and that cuts his ability to, you know, go to that grand jury and have a trial sometimes, because they may be seeking to indict his wife for her conspiratorial role.
And some of our viewers, and I want to give out the number again, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC, I should say, our listeners are asking questions not just about Blagojevich and his wife, but also about some of the others who may be implicated. Let's talk a little bit about Jesse Jackson Jr. In the government's criminal complaint, it says that Senator number 5, who we now know was Jackson, offered to raise upwards of $1 million for the seat. Now, Jackson said the prosecutors told him he wasn't a target. Why wouldn't he be a target if he or even if one of his people offered money to Blagojevich? First, let me come to you, Monica Davey. What do we know after Jesse Jackson Jr.'s press conference and your additional reporting on the story about his possible role in all of this?
I think that's what many people are now scrambling to find out, not just in Jesse Jackson Jr.'s case, but in the cases of several Senate candidate possibles who may, you know, have been somehow implicated, even though the prosecutor, again, has stressed that nobody else is implicated in this and that you shouldn't draw any assumptions from it. I think that there are a lot of people now looking for who potential emissaries might have been for some of these people and whether it is possible that an associate of one of these Senate candidates actually did perhaps offer to do some fundraising for Governor Blagojevich or to do something else. And I think that's what a lot of people are waiting for around here, is sort of holding their breath to find out who else is dragged down by this scandal.
And let me ask, Michael, something of you. We have a comment here from Linda, who is in Connecticut. The charges are specifically about bribes or acts, but there are no charges regarding betraying the public trust of the voters and constituents. And she has a question mark there. Are there no legal fiduciary requirements that would warrant those types of public fraud charges? What do you think, Michael?
Yeah, there's something called deprivation of honest services under the Title 18, the criminal code. It's 1346, which says, and they prosecute, and I have prosecuted as a federal prosecutor, politicians and public officials. It says that, you know, that a public official owes honest services, impartial honest services to the citizens of the entity, even if he or she doesn't get money. They put it in specifically Congress because when there wasn't shown to be a financial or pecuniary benefit, but there was a corruption and improper conduct that a person could be prosecuted. So remember, the complaint is preliminary. The indictment, if he is indicted, they will probably allege deprivation of honest services along with the bribe solicitations and the conspiracy. So the answer to Linda in Connecticut, I think it was, yes, there is a statute. Yes, it will be used. Right now it's preliminary, and we hold public officials to a higher standard of conduct, even if they don't get cash. If they do something that's improper and denies us their impartial, fair services.
Now, this story, of course, broke earlier in the week, and the reason, in part, we wanted to do it today is because there hasn't been a whole lot of conversation about the presumption of innocence in this case. We had a big press conference from a well-known federal prosecutor, Fitzgerald, who, of course, prosecuted Scooter Libby most recently. And this is a criminal case, and the same rights apply to this defendant, Blagojevich, governor though he may be, as would to any other. Michael, any thoughts or concerns about the press conference or the laying out of the facts or the decision to go forward now? Anything from your point of view as a criminal defense attorney?
Listen, I've done those press conferences because when I was a U.S. attorney, and as long as the U.S. attorney stays within the confines of the document and doesn't say other things which are inflammatory, they're okay with this. The problem is, as a defense attorney, you don't want to say too much. First of all, you don't know all the facts. Number two, you don't want to be seen as saying something incorrect. And, you know, the less said, the better. But the problem for defense attorneys today, Jamie, as you know, is that everybody expects you to be a talking head for your client and, you know, become a damage control expert. Most good defense attorneys in this city, the top group, they stay away from all kinds of media exposure unless their client specifically says they have to do it, they feel they have to correct something. The problem for the governor is he's in the public forum. He was in the papers before this. They commented about his hairdo. Come on, I mean, it's Elvis songs. The guy is so public that any news about him will come out. Being his defense attorney, I think you want to ratchet it down because you've got to get the facts first. You got to find out what really happened. And guess what? Sometimes your clients don't tell you the truth. I'm shocked when my clients lie to me. I'm shocked. But what I'm saying is your natural impulse is for your client to tell you to go out and get them. And most defense attorneys will say, wait a minute, let's worry about you in this case before we worry about taking up market share of Jamie Floyd's show.
All right, or Brian Lehrer's, for that matter. All right, let's take one more call, and it's Joyce. I think she's here in Manhattan.
Yes.
Joyce, please go ahead.
Well, I want to ask a question. It's new to me, and I think to a lot of people. that when a senator's seat is vacant, somebody can appoint somebody else. Now there's talk that there was a daughter of a senator or a wife of a senator, or Carolyn Kennedy, for that. And I think she's a very wonderful person. But why is this is not democracy? Isn't there some method that we can apply that either we vote again or there's a vice senator or something like that? That's all my question is.
Well, it's very interesting, Joyce. You know, once upon a time, that's how it was done across the board. And then there was an amendment to the Constitution that allowed for elections of those on Capitol Hill precisely because of complaints of corruption when it was done this way. Michael Kornacki, it certainly does seem to present problems or to open up possibility of pay for play.
Oh, yeah, and it's been, you know, I've had situations where, like, the wife of the deceased senator gets a Senate seat. I think that happened in, I want to say, Missouri, but it's problematic. Best way to handle this, Joyce, is to have a special election very quickly. They do that in New York. They'll have a special election in March if someone has left that office at the end of the year. So that's going on in a couple of locales in New York. But in terms of the appointment process, it's problematic. I mean, even if there's no allegation of a corruption, for example, in New York with Governor Patterson, no one's suggesting he's corrupt, but he's got a real tough problem here. Somebody's going to be unhappy about it. I think 9 out of 10 people will be unhappy, and it puts a lot of pressure on a public official who doesn't want it. I mean, the governor doesn't want to have to think this way, except for the governor of Illinois, who apparently wanted to increase his coffers by it.
And it puts a lot of power in the hands of that executive and that one individual who holds that office. Monica Davey, a final question to you in the 30 seconds or so we have left. What happens next in this case?
Well, I think actually Joyce's question is sort of central to what is happening next here. The lawmakers in Springfield are going to start meeting on Monday, and they're talking about writing some legislation that would take this decision out of the hands of Governor Blagojevich, if he's still around, and would actually potentially create a special election. They're also talking about filing to impeach him. So I think we're going to watch a pretty interesting drama from here.
All right. Well, I thank you both very much for being with us to help us understand it better, looking back and looking ahead. Michael Kornacki, a former federal prosecutor and criminal defense attorney, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Jamie.
And Monica Davey, Chicago bureau chief, New York Times. We thank you, Monica.
Thank you.
I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC.